Well, hello everybody and welcome. My name is Nigel Pope, founder and host of the 55 East Revelations podcast, where we discuss economics, money, and investment ideas. I'm a former financial derivatives salesman, stock market investor, and author. Before we get into the conversation, a quick mention to our sponsors and partners. 55EastFX.com, a global money transfer service for high net worth individuals and corporates, and WesternFX.com, a low-cost fintech solution for B2B FX transactions. And a shout-out to CMC Markets, Plus 500, and IG Index for foreign exchange, equities, commodities, and crypto trading. And back to today, it's my pleasure to have Jeff Wecker as my guest. Jeff is CEO of Global FX Trading Group and a former member of the Chicago Board of Trade with 25 years plus experience in the trading industry, having traded all financial instruments and now specializes in FX. He is a coach and entrepreneur helping novices and experienced traders around the world. He is especially well known in the industry for catching the big moves, and notably Jeff is the developer of Forex Forager, an algorithm that has caught every major currency move in the past 2 years with a maximum of 15 ticks of entry risk. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, how are you? Very happy to be here.
Good to hear, good to hear. So, Jeff, I'd like to start off by asking you to tell our listeners a bit about how you got started in the financial markets and what you're currently doing these days.
Yes, I've been in the business since about 1980. Was started out primarily interested in stocks, and Then I decided that I wanted to be a trader, so I moved from New York to Chicago, and I bought a seat at Chicago Board of Trade, and I started trading in the 30-year bond pit, and that was just a great place to cut your teeth.
I'm sure that must have been quite tough, actually.
The pits were, there are probably a lot of people around today who don't know what the pits were.
Oh, for sure.
It was a big circular forum with about 20, 30 levels of steps, and there would be hundreds of people in there trading with holding cards and writing down the trades on cards, and there'd be a big wave, and you could get pushed down 30 flights of stairs while you were trying to make a trade. And so it was more than just sitting at a computer making a trade. It was a physical battle. You had guys 200 pounders like football players, trying to get position and pushing you around and stabbing you in the back with pencils. It was quite a scene.
So you had to be quite physically tough as well then.
Yes, it was not just, today it's all mental, but then it was physical as well. But that's where I learned, and you learn a lot of things there that you don't learn today in webinars or seminars.
When you're amongst, how many blokes are there? How many fellas standing around you? Big guys?
200-300.
So it's a bit like a scrum.
Absolutely. It was brutal. And, but it was a good place to learn, and I traded against some of the best in the world. And, that's where I learned the things that have kept me going for the past 25 years.
I bet. And these days, after starting in that furore and melee of a scrum, you're now a little bit more sedate. And what are you doing these days?
Right. Well, I made the sold my seat at Chicago Board of Trade in the 90s and transitioned to online trading. Which was a lot easier and less band-aids, less hospital visits to get prepared. But I am now CEO of Global FX Trading Group, and it's kind of a different role for me, although I still trade. And the things I'm into today, number one, personal coaching. I have students in about 15 different countries. A lot in the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Dubai, South Africa, China. And I teach and coach on a one-on-one basis on Skype usually. Mm. And, I actually trade with my students. So I generally start them off trading in a demo account. And I don't let them trade with live money until they're seeing profits in the demo account. One or two other things I'm doing today, I'm funding traders around the globe. Generally provide them up to $300,000 to start. Once they show me they can trade, there is a short assessment period. And we also have several robots we've developed over the years. And you know, now involved in artificial intelligence, along with the robots. Lastly, we're really we have chat groups and trading rooms around the globe. One of them has about 500 traders in it, and that's a free group. We're kind of playing it forward there, trying to give back to the industry and. As I said, there's about 500 people in this free group, and we're teaching them how to trade for free.
Wow, very good.
We believe in, you know, in playing it forward, paying back, giving something back to the industry that has been good to us.
Yeah.
And finally, we have smaller chat room trading groups that are for experienced traders, and that's not free, but we have groups in Telegram doing that. We have moderators for the group as well as myself. So that's kind of what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
That's kind of the transition I've made over the last 40 years.
Yeah, well, you know, you think about 40 years, you think it's a long time, but actually an awful lot has happened. You know, you've gone from standing in the pits or, you know, fighting in the pits, you know, when it really gets going. I mean, I've seen pictures on TV of what it used to be. I mean, and I've got friends that used to work in the London Exchange, you know, the Futures Exchange when it used to be around here, and all those different coloured jackets, and it's just, you know, hands going everywhere and people jostling for position, you know, you've got to be up for the knocks, you know, and I know some people did get, you know. Well, there's a little bit of fisticuffs and what have you.
The
moderators, you know, had to.
Well, you know what could happen, Nigel, besides getting pushed around and stabbed with pencils, you might make a trade with someone for 1,000 bonds, right? And the next day the bonds open up, limit up, and the guy denies he made the trade.
Wow.
And you're stuck. And a lot of people, I saw a lot of people go out of business just from that. They're called out trades, okay?
Yeah.
Where you think you made a trade with somebody, but they deny it the next day. And if the bonds open the wrong way against you, limit up or limit down, you sat down, you wrote a check, and you said goodbye.
Wow.
And you were gone.
Just like that.
That happened. Yeah, that happened more times than I'd like to think.
Wow, brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, massive contrast to today, because here we are, you know, you and I are conversing London and Chicago, and you know, it's not brutal. We could be having, you know, we could be having coaching one on one, you know, and that's how it's going to be done 40 years on from then. So
yeah,
I mean,
much more cerebral today.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, what we're doing now, I mean, you, as I say, you could be teaching a student. And in terms of sort of educating students and getting them on the right path to trading, you'd have to create a strategy, or each student would have to create themselves an individual strategy. Would that be right? That fits in with their own mindset. How would you go about doing that?
Well, you know, first we start with... you know, what kind of student is it? If it's someone who has a full-time job and can only trade part-time, that's one kind of issue to deal with, as opposed to someone who's a full-time trader. So, regardless of who they are, you know, I always focus on risk to begin with. You know, trading's like a poker game. You've got to protect your chips. If you lose your chips, you're out of the game.
Mm.
So, you know, we focus on teaching them systems where the risk reward is very good, to find points on the chart where you can take your lowest risk. You know, for example, in Euro USD that we trade a lot, I never risk one of the five pips to get into a trade. And what that means is that you can lose 15, 20 times in a row, which is very unlikely, but you can still be in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, most of the traders who have problems today, they take too much risk. They hold their losers way too long. And you have to teach people how to get out of their losers quickly. And equally important, how to build on winners. It's not just enough to get out of losers. You've got to build your winners. And the reason is that you really can't expect to be right more than 30, 40% of the time. Even the greats like George Soros, Stanley Druckenmiller, these guys were not right more than 30, 40% of the time, but they knew how to make enough money when they were right to cover all the losses. So you've got to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of goes against conventional thinking and wisdom in trying to only win on 30 to 40% of your trades and the rest, I don't know, 60-odd percent losers. It sounds very much like you've trained in the classical CTA style. You know, would that be a fair assessment? You know, like the Dunn trading, Richard Dennis of the Turtle fame, Ed Secota, these guys, because they were very much of the cut losses, cut losses, cut losses, let profits run, and try and get some really big winners. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, not just let profits run, but build on them.
Build on, okay.
You can't put on a 10 lot and hold that for a year, but you want that, if that 10 lot's going your way, you want it to be 100 lot before it's done. So you've got to know when to add to the winners, okay, and how much to add. Richard Dennis I traded against at the Board of Trade.
Oh, right.
He was the great grain trader, soybeans. He made his fortune during the great, what they call the Russian grain robbery in the 70s.
I didn't know that.
And, yeah, we had big droughts here in the U.S., and the Russians were secretly buying wheat under the table, and I guess he was aware of that, or at least he was aware of the trend, and he built up enormous positions in the grain. And I think he made $500 million in the 70s, which was a bit of money at that time.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, even with inflation in the 70s, that's a bit of money.
Yeah, I was in the bond pit, and he was over in the grain pit. And there was another guy I traded against and with, Tom Baldwin.
I know the name, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Tom, I traded with him in the 30-year bond pit, and he could move the bond market himself.
Wow.
With 300 guys in the pits, plus Goldman Sachs and everyone else sending orders in, he could actually move the bond pit. He traded about 20,000 contracts a day, and he was just enormous. So I was lucky to stand within sight of him and watch what he did for a couple of years.
Gosh,
and
yeah.
These are the guys I learned from.
So was Tom Baldwin, if I'm not mistaken, did he used to trade for himself? Was it his own account, or did he have quite a bit of flow coming through?
When I knew him, I think he was trading for his own account, developed, started a firm a little later.
Yeah. Wow.
But, I mean, 20,000 contracts a day, 30-year bonds, they're worth several billion dollars. And, he could move it. He actually moved the bond market.
Incredible.
Scary.
Yeah.
He couldn't do that today.
No. Absolutely phenomenal.
I don't think even J.P. Morgan could move the bond market.
Okay. Yeah, dear. So we talked about cutting losses, building on winners. How do you take profits? When do you take profits?
Well, generally, when I do a trade, I have a target, some kind of measurement from a chart. You know, many of them are very easy. Everyone knows how to do a head and shoulders measurement, to what the target might be, or a Fibonacci retracement. You have a general idea of, where it's going to go. But very often it goes a lot farther. Early in my career, I can't tell you how many times I put a trade on, made 300 pips, thought I was smart, got out, and went another 300. And I missed it. So
yeah.
I learned that lesson. And the way you do it is even when you reach your target, you don't take yourself out. The market is smarter than you are. So what you do is you move up a trail and stop, and you let the market take you out, okay? If let's say you're $1,000 on the trade, you just say to yourself, well, how much am I willing to give back to stay in this market? If I'm up, say, $1,000, just pick a number, I might say, I'll give back $200 just to stay in this trade because it may go another $300. I don't know, and nobody knows. So what I'll do is I'll move up my trail and stop because you never want to give it all back. I mean, that's the cardinal sin. A lot of traders, I've seen them get way up in trade and then give it all back. You never want to do that. So you got to put a trail and stop in, but give yourself enough room. So if it keeps going, and very often it will, these things go, you know, these things go a lot further than you would think. And so just keep moving up your trail and stop, and that'll keep you in the market. If you could take it out, well, the market took you out, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
You don't want to take yourself out because you're not smart enough.
That's very fair. Very fair. I mean, I always try and remind myself. I mean, I've the last few years I've been trading stocks, and I remember one particular stock I had at my own target, you know, based on what I thought the fair value was going to be. So I'd picked some up at about £4.5 to begin with. Started to build up a position, £6, £7. I thought this thing's probably worth about £11.5. Anyway, 9 months later, it was £10. I thought, you know what, actually, I started to get quite volatile. You know, days it was up 15%, then it was down 20%. All of a sudden, there was quite a bit of volatility. I thought, okay, well, it's not too far away from my target. I'll take my chips off the table because there's something else better I can put the money into.
Right.
Anyway, 6 months later, it was at £20.
Right.
I'd left more than double on the table.
Right.
Which is it's gut wrenching, but at the same time, you think, well, I did quite well out of it anyway. I've got to be happy about that. But
yeah, but that fits in with what I was saying. If you would put a stop loss at £6, you would have got the 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So. So getting that strategy sorted, then you've got the there's a psychological battle that goes on with every trader, an internal battle. How to stay in the trade, if you think you're right, if you think you're wrong. How important do you think psychology is in trading?
Well, it's important if you let it be, okay? My system, as I said, I trade off pivots, okay? So and pivots are a point on a line, okay? It might be one example of a pivot could be the neckline on the head and shoulders. If that's the case, it's very simple that you want to be long if it's above that pivot, and you want to be out or short if it's below. So you eliminate the emotion that way. Strangely enough, I've made a lot of money on those kind of trades, and never knew what the news was, okay? In other words, I might be long the pound, and I may not know why. A day later, they came out with Brexit news, something positive about Brexit for the pound. It goes up 200 pips. I've been long for 2-3 days, and then 2-3 days later, they tell me why I made money.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. I've experienced.
Yeah, so we try to eliminate the emotion. We don't even, in our trading rooms, we barely want to know the news, all right? Well, the traders want to know the news. It seems people need a reason for everything. I don't need a reason. I prefer not to have a reason. I prefer to be long above a certain price and short below a certain price, regardless of the news.
Very interesting.
You know, trading off news is very hard because they never tell you, you know, they don't tell you in advance. Price moves first, then comes fundamentals.
Yeah, totally agree.
If you wait for the news, you're going to buy the top or you're going to sell the bottom. Better to have a system where you know when do you want to be long, when do you want to be short, what price that's at, And you could in or out based on that price, not on opinions, rumors, news, or whatever. That's the way I prefer to trade.
Yeah.
And really, I don't have much emotion in my trades.
I
don't like to lose, okay? I'm not happy when I lose. I'm happy when I win. But I don't get, you know, don't get emotional about it.
Yeah. I suppose you think there's, you know, every trade that you're going to do or you're going to make, it's just one of how many thousands. So what's one trade gonna impact upon you as a as an emotional impact? Probably not a great deal.
Right. Yeah. You have to be like a professional golfer or a professional athlete. If you make a bad trade or you make a mistake, it has to immediately leave your head.
Yeah.
That's why in golf, for example, that's what the greats do. They can hit a bad shot, it's out of mind immediately, and they're on to the next shot.
I think that's
what you have to be about your trades. You make a mistake,
I think that's a very good attitude.
Lose, very important.
Yeah.
Don't be thinking about the last trade. Just practice getting it out of your head.
Yeah, I mean that then will also help your focus and discipline. Yeah, just to keep you in that zone. You know, so it's okay, fine. Don't worry about that one. Just next one coming.
Right. The other thing some of the great traders do that I've learned, over the last 30 years is they tend to focus on a single idea. They don't get scattered all over the place, okay? Like George Soros, when he made his fortune, when he broke the Bank of England or came close to it.
Yeah.
This was a single idea he had, that the pound was overvalued, and it was going to bust out of the European exchange, whatever they called it at the time.
I think it was ERM.
And he had this, he had European mechanism, whatever. But he had a single idea, okay? And he made a fortune, and he probably never made as much money on anything else. And the people who he was a mentor for, who traded with him, were part of his group, they made a fortune also.
Mm.
So it's not bad to, you can have only one trade, have a single idea that you're focused on, like he was focused on the pound and the ERM, and you trade that, and it keeps you focused, okay? You're not scattered all over the place. I know if I get 20 trades going in FX, I get lost. I can't. Some people are smart enough. I'm not. I cannot keep 20 trades in my head, okay? But I know guys who could do it, but I'm not that. I'm better trading like, Soros and these other guys, kind of a single idea person.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, they always say, look, we stick to what we know, and we try and, what do they call it? We stick to our circle of competence. You know, we try and focus on what we do well. And if we don't know about it, we leave it alone, because we'll probably get our fingers burned. So there's a lot to be said.
So, you can wait. You can wait for the opportunity, okay? I think Jimmy Rogers, who's been a trader for 100 years, whatever. You've heard of him, right? He always said a couple of things. Don't make a trade, or don't do something until there's something to do. And, I say that to myself every day that I look at the chart. I say, is there something to do here? If there isn't, don't do anything, okay?
Yeah.
The other thing he said is your attitude ought to be when you see a trade or when you see an opportunity. He always said the feeling you should have is that the money's just laying on the table for you to pick it up.
Well, that would be a nice feeling.
Well, it gives you confidence, and he's kind of right. Why, in other words, why make a trade unless there's something to do? And number two, why make a trade if you don't feel the money's just sitting there waiting for you?
Very true. Yeah. Make it as easy as possible.
Yeah. So I've learned a lot from the greats, okay? And was fortunate enough to actually trade with some of them.
Yeah.
Like, Dennison Baldwin, and actually be 10 feet away from them in pits.
Wow. Yeah, because I read a lot about Dennis. and also Baldwin. Who's the author? Market Wizards. Was it Schwartz? I forget his name. He wrote three books on Market Wizards. But
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I have somebody. Wasn't Williams, was it?
No. I'll have to look him up. But I came across these are the legends, for me. Yeah. These are my introduction to financial markets and trading, back in the 90s.
Yeah. I have about 35 of those guys that I follow, and I write a series on LinkedIn about each of them that I've been publishing on LinkedIn for years now. And it's a very popular series.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I get typically 5,000 to 8,000 views on each article that I write about one of these guys, like Soros and Rogers and Druckenmiller and Lipschultz,
yeah. Kovner, Bruce Kovner.
Bruce Kovner. Yeah, a lot of them knew each other. Many were involved with Soros. Okay, and. Yeah, it's a very popular series on LinkedIn. People love it.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So in terms of losing trades, we're coming to talk about failure. How do you cope with multiple consecutive losing trades?
Well, I kind of, build it into my... I start off with the idea that we talked about that I'm only going to be right 30-40% of the time.
Mm.
So I go into it with that attitude. I think too many people go into the attitude with that they have to be right 70-80% of the time. And if you think like that, your losses are going to get to you.
Mm.
My psychology is I'm only going to, win 3 or 4 out of 10 trades. So I expect to lose 5-6 in a row. So I'm not terribly shocked when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, what you must have had when you were starting out, you must have had some sort of, let's call them hard hits from the market. The market knocked you back. Can you talk us through any experiences that you had?
Yeah, I had some terrible days. But it's all part of the learning experience. Remember the stock market crash of 1987? I think October of 87, the Dow dropped 500 points in one day, which as a percentage was enormous.
Okay? Yeah, one of the biggest drops, I think.
Yeah, there'd be 12,000 points today. That's how scary it was. And I got in a position, an option position I had on. I think I was short bonds and short puts at the time. So anyway, as the stock market crashed, the bonds just went out of sight. They just went straight up. And this was early in my career. And I was down about $250,000 at one point. And that's when $250,000 was a lot of money.
Indeed. Absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah. Millions today.
And it was interesting. If you lose a couple of $1,000, you might kick a chair. Okay, or if you kick the dog or something, you get mad. Okay, but when you're stuck $250,000, you get numb.
Yeah,
you don't get mad, you get numb, and you just sit there and you stare at the screen. And it was a brutal day because the bonds just kept going up. The good news is I did nothing because I was totally numb. Had I done something, it would have been wrong. And the good news is by the end of the day, the markets came back a little, and I ended up losing $80,000.
Wow.
And was really thrilled.
Absolutely. You survived.
Yeah. So what's the important lesson there? Risk.
Yeah.
I should have never put myself in that position with that could happen. That was a black swan event, okay? It's 1 in a million.
Yeah.
But if you put yourself... You got to understand the risk of the position you're in. And I didn't understand the risk. I was short bonds, short puts. I didn't understand that if there was a black swan event, 1 in a million.
Yeah, I mean,
I learned.
They hardly were. We hadn't heard of that phrase then, did we?
Right. So you've at least got to be aware of what could happen tomorrow, okay? Even if the odds are very small, but it almost ruined my career. Okay, that would have been a big hit for me, 250,000 in 1987. So you've got to understand risk.
Yeah, I mean, how do you actually convey that to your students? You know, because if you don't live through something, the experience of going through all that, well, pain, emotion, stress, you know, the thought process that got you there in the first place, you know, what went wrong, what can I do better? How do you convey that to students so that they can sort of learn from the impact of your experiences?
Yeah, well, I tell them, you know, I tell them stories like this, and the big thing is that I didn't do, if I had stops then, okay, I felt that, you know, at that time it was a kind of a neutral position, and I had no stops in on those trades. If I had stops in, well, maybe I would have lost 30,000 instead of being stuck 250,000, you know, at the time. So you've got to have stops somewhere. You know, the because, you know, the odds are very high, but there's really no limit to what could happen to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right?
If you don't have stops placed, then, you know, I don't care if you want to put them far away, that's fine, but you got to have them somewhere because you don't want to blow out. Like I said in the beginning, if you lose all your chips, you're out of the game.
That's right. I remember when I started out as a broker, the one of the senior brokers said to me, he said, if you haven't got any chips, you can't play.
That's exactly right. So maintain your, protect your chips at all costs.
Yeah. Self wealth preservation. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you, you've mentioned a few of the great trading names, you know, from the pits, but have you got any sort of investor that you really admire and you think you really would have liked to have learned something from him or her?
Well, I learned something from each of these guys that I've been talking about. I can't say that anyone particular stands out because the greats tend to do it the same way.
Oh.
If you know, they tend to wait for something. They wait to develop a single idea.
Yeah.
And then when they find it and it starts to happen, they go all in. And they make, you know, they go all in and they, you know, that's where they've made their big money. There was one trader, I can't remember his name. Druckenmiller or Lipschitz, somebody. But the there was a crash at the time of the 87 crash, I think. People were bailing out of the dollar because the stock market was collapsing. So a lot of these foreign currencies started rising in value. And this particular guy noticed that the New Zealand dollar was, you know, went straight up and was really unwarranted, okay, for, you know, why should New Zealand currency be?
A minor currency.
So he started selling, you know, he started selling the New Zealand dollar. He built up a position, I think that was bigger than all the money in the Bank of New Zealand had, okay. In fact, they were, politicians were calling from New Zealand to Goldman Sachs, where he worked, to tell him tell this guy to get out of this trade. He's killing us. Okay, and of course, when things calmed down, people realized New Zealand dollar is not worth as much, and plunged, and he made millions. And, and he got out. So, what? Here's a story of a guy who, while everyone else was going insane about this massive drop in the stock market and the dollar, he maintained his head, okay?
Yeah.
And he said, this New Zealand dollar is out of whack. It's not, it cannot be worth this much and has to come back at some point. He made his bet. He made, that made his career for him, okay? That's what, you know, what he's well known for. So what I'm saying here is it's important to be able to maintain your head while others are freaking out around you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I can tell you one more quick story. I had a friend at Chicago Board of Options. When the stock market crashed and was down 500, he looked at the price. He was an options specialist. He looked at the price of the calls. I think it was on Ford Motor Company. And he noticed the price of the calls were the same price as they were before the crash 8 hours ago.
Wow, how bizarre.
I mean, Ford was down 50%, but the volatility was so screaming high that the calls did not drop. He
Incredible.
saw that opportunity and he sold everyone he could find.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Was the I said the $30 calls were the same price at 30 as they were when the stock was 12.
That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. But everyone else was insane. He kept his head and he saw this on the board. He sold every option, every call he could find on Ford, because he knew it was not going back to 30 the next day from 12.
For sure. No chance. No chance.
And he
Yeah.
made a fortune. And so again, the only point I want to make is, while everyone else is panicking, try and keep your head and you may see an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, we say that. I mean, I'm saying, yeah, gosh, that's obvious. But actually, when you are in the thick of it, and if you're on the floor and there's all that emotion, there's all the shouting, the screaming, trying to keep your head is pretty. It's like being in battle. I'm pretty, not that I've been in battle, but I can only imagine. It's just you've got everything going on around you. Trying to keep your head is even harder than just sitting at a desk watching the market. So.
But it's just a good thing to keep in your mind. You say, well, next time there's something crazy happens, I'm gonna just, calm down, look around and see what's going on, and is there an opportunity here?
Yeah,
Okay,
absolutely.
because some of the great opportunities have been during panics. I remember the night Donald Trump got elected, and the Dow dropped from, I don't know what, 18,000 down to 16,000, dropped 2,000 points overnight. If you bought that panic at 16,000 Dow, it went straight up to 27,000.
Wow.
So for those who kept their head and say, this is not warranted, this plunge in the market, the economy is not that bad. They made 10,000 points in the Dow
Yeah, incredible.
today.
So
So,
then that sort of leads us on then to volatility. How do you treat volatility? Because a lot of people, they hate volatility. I don't mind it. I think, yeah, okay, it's all about price discovery. So if something's volatile, it tells me that the price hasn't been discovered. So long as it's not too illiquid a market. If it's a liquid market and it's volatile, it means there's a bit of price discovery going on, and I think there's opportunity. How do you see
Yes.
that?
Well, I've certainly made my best money during volatile markets. I mean, in sideways markets, I don't know what to do other than sell options. Okay, sell puts and calls, but make sure you're protected. No, I like volatility because, as I said, I'm basically a pivot point trader. I want to be long above a certain price, short below. So the more it moves above or below my price, that's going to be good for me. I don't like sideways markets, and I don't think I do that well in them. So,
No, totally. I think they're good for market makers, but not
yeah,
really for.
and option sellers, yeah, sell puts and calls.
Exactly. So, gonna throw in a curveball question. What's your view on Bitcoin? If you have one.
I have not traded Bitcoin. I certainly looked at it when it was $300 a long time ago. I did not buy it. I couldn't figure out what was going to be done with it. Also, I've learned from history and history that generally it takes about 20 years for something to move from discovery to value. A lot of things. Let's look at the internet. The internet was, when did that start?
Ooh, early 90s.
Yeah, okay. So people were buying all these stocks like crazy, all the internet stocks, okay, up to 2008, and then I think that's when they collapsed and people got killed. But it wasn't until another 10 years later that companies like Amazon and all the others started using this internet technology.
Yeah.
So it took about 20 years from when the internet was first discovered, or when Joe Biden discovered it. It wasn't Biden. Who was that guy who said he discovered the internet? I forgot his name. Politician. Yeah.
Okay.
But the point is, it took about 20 years to, and it seems to be true throughout history, to turn a technological innovation into something useful. And the internet's a good case, okay?
Mm.
It was discovered in the 80s or 90s. It wasn't until after 2010 that people really started using it. And I think the same thing was true with Bitcoin, that it's probably going to be 10, 20 years from when it was discovered until it's put to use where you can make...
I think there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot to be said.
You did not have to buy Amazon stock in 1980 when the internet came out, but you had to buy it in 2010, 20 years later.
Absolutely right. So in that regard.
So I say wait.
Yeah.
Take a look. Watch who's using blockchain. Watch who's using Bitcoin. And you have plenty of time. Wait to see who's using it, how they're using it. Does it make sense? Is the use going to spread internationally to a lot of people? And when you see that, when you see these people using it, not just talking about it, but actually using it, like Amazon started to use the internet, you have plenty of time to buy it.
Yeah, you've hit on something very important there, because I've been watching and listening to a lot of people talking about Bitcoin, but no one has actually put it like that. And that fits really well in the way of thinking. And out of all the conversations I've heard, that's what's been missing. Just that. It takes about 20 years. Now we're 10, 11 years into it, but there's still a long way to go. A lot of development going on, and there's price discovery. That movement from price discovery to actual value is going to take, it's got to be 20 years.
Right.
You know,
because
that's how humans evolve.
Right. So, like I said, just watch. Watch who's using it. Is it growing in use? People using blockchain, more and more and more.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to make a good decision.
Yeah.
And you have time. You got plenty of time. I mean, where's Bitcoin now? I don't even know. 10,000,
9,000, 8,000, something like
that. So it's going nowhere right now. The low was, what was the high? 20,000. So it's halfway back from the high. So no reason to be in a rush. Just watch. Yes. Just watch.
Yeah, wait for the opportunity, as we talked about.
And you'll see it. You'll see it, because you'll see everybody using it. You'll see the banks using it and whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's good. I'm going to ask you one final question to start to bring the conversation to a close. If you could reach out to your younger self now and give him some advice, what would you say?
I would say I'd want to trade again. And I'd say understand what you're doing, and most of all, understand risk.
Yeah, very good.
That's the best single advice I could give.
Yeah.
If you understand risk, you will probably survive.
Yeah, risk is everything.
You could be wrong 10,000 times, okay? And many of us have been over our careers. You're wrong the first 10,000 times, but you finally figured it out on 10,001st. So don't lose all your chips and understand risk, and you'll be...
Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah. Very good. Well, I think that's a lovely way to bring to close our discussion, Jeff, and I'm sure our listeners have much to take away from what you've described and shared with us today. So thank you for joining us and sharing your time and knowledge, and we wish you and the Global FX Trading Group much success in the future. So just before you go, just tell our listeners where they can find you to know more about what you're doing and your expertise.
Yeah, you can find us on the internet easily, globalfxtradinggroup.com. And all the things we've discussed, you will find there. So, you know, thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Great conversation.
Good stuff. Likewise, Jeff, and very much thanks for joining us. And I hope to have you on again in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, cheers.